Well, yep. Again, we'll get to the Gmail thing because that's coming. Any Gmail people listening to this, I would hold on to something if I was you. Friends and enemies, this is Bad Voltage Series 2, episode 65, I think.
It's a long season, it's a long series, isn't it?
Well, the previous one was like 93 episodes long or something. Because in the first series, I was honestly worried we'd have like the equivalent of the year 2000 problem where we went over two digits for an episode number and it broke everything. But it didn't, so we're okay.
Yes.
So, this is Bad Voltage, and we're only going to talk about one thing in this episode. Yep.
Is that one thing, how the release scripts for this show are written in COBOL?
Or no. Do you want to do the releases? No, shut up.
Right. I'm staying out of this.
Yeah. The lash together. On the other hand, the release scripts for the show are open source, sort of. So shut up. Anyway, yes.
Works better than the email for the show, so it's fine.
Yes, John.
Shut up.
So we are going to talk about Superhuman.
We are. Superhuman is a kind of a new email client tool workflow system that's kind of getting quite a bit of buzz, especially in the Silicon Valley region. And I signed up for it. And I've started using it, and I have thoughts to share and co-presenters to annoy. So
that's alarmingly accurate.
Being honest, one of the things I have discovered in this discussion is that we all have quite a lot of thoughts about email. For everyone going, oh, email is dead, actually, it seems not.
Yeah, there's a lot in this, and it's actually a really interesting conversation. So
it is.
Shall we get on with it?
Let's get on with it.
And now, Superhuman.
I've had a bit of an interesting experience recently, and I've been playing with this tool called Superhuman, which has been doing the rounds a little bit in the Silicon Valley-ish kind of, I don't know how to describe it, but just the Silicon Valley world of people trying to look cool.
you missed out the word bellends, but yeah.
So the backstory here is
does it make juice out of a thing and cost $400?
Not yet, but that's coming. That's in version two. So, like many of you, I don't particularly like email. I find it cumbersome. It's something we have to do. It's a necessary evil, and
email's great. Carry
right,
on.
Sure. But we've all got our methods and approaches to how we manage our email, right? So for me, speaking personally as a consultant, and I'm sure it's the same thing for you, Mr. Langridge, you know, I have different clients and I've got a way in which their email goes into one specific place. And, you know, you've got all the crap that comes in when you buy something, you get added to someone's list. And, you know, so I've kind of got my own vague way of working in an email, but it's by no means perfect. And I have this constant anxiety, like many people, that I'm missing things, that I'm not getting to something, or that I take too long to reply to, or whatever it might be. So there's this company called Superhuman that was founded. And I actually met, weirdly, just I was at an event that I was at last year, I met the founder of them, who used to, he founded a company called Reportive, and he's previously a game designer.
I remember Reportive. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Yep. And he was gave me a bit of an introduction to it, but I didn't really think anything of it. And then I don't know how this happened, but a couple of weeks, like last week or the week before, I started thinking about Superhuman, and they make pretty bold claims about email. It's basically an email service. It's an email client, or more of a front end than a proper service. And they make claims about, you know, like doubling the speed of your email and all this kind of stuff, and, you know, making email fun again. And I thought, what a load of bollocks. There's no way that that's actually true. Went onto YouTube and I watched a video of this guy, Raul, who's the CEO of Superhuman, just walking through a few examples of what it does. And I'll be honest with you, I was compelled by this, and I'm going to walk through this in a second. But here's the thing, it's $30 a month. which seems expensive, right? That for an email client.
That's expensive for basically anything online.
Right. It is expensive. I mean, I wouldn't say it's expensive for anything online. Really? There's a lot of service. A lot of services like $29 a month for the, you know, the pro version of whatever they're doing. You have a free tier and then a pro tier and then...
So you can have access to every song that's ever been recorded in the history of mankind, or for only three times as much money, your email is twice as fast. Yes. Carry on.
I think if you look at how they pitch this, though, with $30, it's very much a luxury item aimed at Silicon Valley VCs, not at the average person.
Well, you know who it's designed for? This will be of particular interest to you, Mr. Langridge, as if not entirely queued up. It's designed for the prosumer.
Such a dickhead. It's...
You don't like that term, do you?
I do not. I think it's interesting. I mean, you should get into the discussion of it, but I do think... I think there's a distinction between people who actually need a really powerful email tool and people who would like to be able to claim that they're the sort of person who needs a really powerful email tool. And
yes.
I suspect the happy hunting ground in the valley is people who want to be able to say, I get so much email, I have so much to deal with that I need a tool like Superhuman. But someone who maybe actually does need something like this is you. So talk about it.
So yeah, so let me explain what it is first, and then I'm going to explain my experience of it, and then we can talk about whether this is a good thing
and
or
then,
a bad thing.
I don't know.
I have opinions.
Should I hold him down and you kick him in the nuts, Jeremy, or do I do it the other way around?
By the way,
I'd say let's save that for the segment, but we are in fact in the segment.
For the good people at Superhuman who are almost certainly going to be listening to this, my two compadres are both dicks, and you should expect that going into this, okay? So... in a nutshell, what it is I'll tell you what I did, and they've probably got other use cases as well, but you sign up. Right now, you've got to basically tap in your email address, and you get added to a wait list. And they've got this kind of, at first what I thought was ridiculous, but this thing where you have a consultation with them first, where they kind of walk you through and get everything set up. And you authenticate your, in my case, my G Suite account, which asks for all of the privileges. and then I got on the phone with this guy who works at Superhuman. And this guy was actually incredibly helpful. It wasn't one of these annoying, you know,
Wait. You rang up a guy?
I tapped my email address in, right? Added to the wait list. Then they scheduled a consultation with me. Okay, which is a half an hour meeting where
either got five customers or 60 billion in VC funding.
So I think it's important to set a little bit of background here because you're jumping, I think without context, because I know the context helped me. So give me two minutes to add that context and then I don't want to interrupt, but you go right from there. So when Jono suggested we discuss this topic, the first thing Eck and I asked were a bunch of technical questions around how it works. Is it just an IMAP client, or is it a Gmail plugin, or is it a completely owned client, or do you need a server? He knew none of the answers to these things. He basically just clicked one thing. So what it is a front end to Gmail. When you sign up to the very nice looking site, it tells you that there's a wait list of a couple hundred thousand people. I signed up for it yesterday and immediately got skipped to the front of the queue to the onboarding. So I suspect
because astonishingly not a same here.
Maybe there is a wait list in and it was a random thing.
No, which is special, Jeremy. We're
so
very
anyways,
special indeed.
The first step is to answer about 5-minute in-depth quiz about how you use email that is not skippable. The final question was, what do you not like about something related to Superhuman? And I put, and if they're listening to this was me, 11-part onboarding questions for email clients, because it seems excessive to me. After you click that 11, after you go through that 5 to 10 minute process, there's a mandatory 30-minute meeting via Zoom where you literally have to give them access to your inbox and have them walk you through their workflow because they're opinionated about how the tool should be used. So I find one thing that's interesting to me is they're very clear on what the product is. They're very clear on what the product does. they say if you don't spend more than 3.5 or 4 hours in an email client, that you shouldn't even consider it. And one thing that I found super interesting here is the team that built this really is an impressive team, right? They built Reportive, as you mentioned, but they've also built Pry, which is for Ruby developers and is used by a whole bunch of people. They co-founded LiveRamp. It's a really amazing team who's built some really, really cool things. So I think a lot of times when you look at things, especially if you're a VC, you're not just funding a product, you're funding a team. The team's clearly great. They did raise $30 million, which means they're looking at a valuation of about $300 million. How they get to that as an email client that's built on top of and requires Gmail, I'm suspicious of, but we can get to that later. But so that's the process right there.
Yep.
One thing that I think is great, I listened to a couple podcasts from the founder, super interesting about his vision on finding product fit, I think is super compelling. And I think well-intentioned, requiring a 30-minute onboarding to a tool that solves a problem for people with not a lot of time seems unintuitive to me.
You see, and also actually you touched on the product market fit that they published a year or so ago, maybe a couple of years ago. That's actually really interesting, what they've written there.
I'd
encourage anyone who's trying to figure out product market fit to take a look at it.
For sure.
I disagree with Jeremy on this. I thought that I had the same level of suspicion of this 30-minute session. I don't like people forcing me into calls. And I sometimes want to take my time to figure out, you know, how I'm going to work. The thing I did find useful about this was Superhuman has got a series. Let me explain what the features are, or broadly what it does, and then we can talk about how they want you to work.
Yeah.
Essentially what it is, people, is it's a very simple looking email client. One of the things that they strip away all of the clutter that you see in something such as Gmail, which in itself for me is refreshing. As I talked about on Bad Voltage previously, I was a huge fan of Inbox. And one of the reasons why I like that is I don't like clutter. Right. And what they do is you've got a big list of messages, kind of like in Gmail, with the person and the subject. And then you can click through these messages and you can see them just like in Gmail. But the key value of this is you can press Control K and it pops up a little box with a ton of keyboard shortcuts to doing various things.
Just to clarify, for those of you out there who are listening to this and are sort of programmer-ish or inclined in that direction, it's a command palette. So they're not keyboard shortcuts. It's a searchable list of commands.
That's a fair way of describing it.
So it's like the command palette in Sublime Text or Visual Studio Code. For those of you who are Mac users, it's kind of like Spotlight, or a better thing would be Alfred. So that kind
of
thing.
Or the HUD in Ubuntu.
The HUD, the Unity Dash, that kind of vibe. So yeah, it's a command palette.
And then they do, that's a good, I'm glad you mentioned that, because they do have keyboard shortcuts for accessing different parts of the interface. And what's interesting is, I noticed this today, when I do my email, I don't touch the mouse at all, which is interesting, because I was usually mousing around quite a bit with Gmail. One of the things that they do, so first of all, you can access everything very quickly from a keyboard, which I think is, again, designed for that kind of professional audience, mums and dads who depend on the mouse, and not that it's going to be too complicated for them to use. But if you're keyboard orientated or a keyboard warrior, this is good. But they also have this notion called snippets. And what you can do is you can press command on a Mac, a command semicolon. And you can basically, I'll give you an example. One thing that happens all the time for me is somebody introduces me to somebody, or I get someone email me directly and I want to schedule a call in. And my assistant, Mindy, coordinates scheduling those calls. So what I need to do is I need to, first of all, click on the email to select it. I need to hit reply, type in a message, and usually try to make it nice and personal and directed towards them. Say, you know, I'd like to connect you to Mindy. You can schedule this time in. Add her to the CC field and then send the email, right? And then archive the email so it's no longer in my inbox. What you can do in Superhuman is you can create a draft response. And it automatically adds her into the CC. I can add the bare bones of, you know, I'd like to connect you to Mindy. So then when I have one of those emails, I can press command semicolon, add a little one line personalized intro, and then the rest has already been filled in by Superhuman, hit command shift return, and then it goes off and it archives it.
So it's templatized canned responses.
So it's essentially a canned response. Now, I was using templates in Gmail, which are handy for new emails. And when you're sending multiple emails out for for common things. But you can do this in a variety of different ways. So I already just went in there and started setting up some of these snippets, and that's already saving me a whole bunch of time. Now, the other thing as well is I think it's 100 milliseconds. They're trying to get every interaction with superhuman down to less than 100 milliseconds.
The rule is, if this is not a superhuman rule, it's a general rule. If a thing takes less than 100 milliseconds, it appears psychologically instantaneous.
You know who was super big on that? The person who started Gmail at Google.
Yeah.
Right.
We will come back to how Gmail should have been this and now isn't later on.
Right. Yeah, that is.
Believe me, there is
grist for the mill there.
That point is not falling off the agenda for this particular discussion.
Now, fair. I'll be honest with you. When I saw Raul, the CEO, do that demo in the YouTube video that sparked my interest in this, I was interested in that, but I didn't really think of it as being that big of a deal. I just thought I'm used to Gmail being a bit slow and laggy. Going from superhuman in the week that I've used it to Gmail is like going back in time. It is way different. It is so much laggier.
I can imagine it's like how it would have been if you went from Gmail back to Yahoo Mail.
Mm. And that responsiveness for things like, especially when you start out, of going and like bulk selecting emails and deleting them or skipping through things. Again, particularly as the whole point is that it's about efficiency, right? You're using your keyboard to skip through emails, you know, going up and down, pressing enter to go into an email, command semicolon, respond with a snippet, blah, 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 blah. There's also a bunch of other little features that are in there. Things like you can press command U on an email and it will not just, it'll pop up a little command set of command options where you can unsubscribe to that email, but you can also then remove all of the previous emails from that from your inbox, which for most things is fine. You've got to be careful to make sure if you bought something, otherwise it'll remove the receipt, for example.
Every other email you've ever got from Amazon or whatever.
Right. So, you know, but for some, like I was subscribed to, you know, the UGG mailing list because I bought something for Erica from UGG. And I hate it when companies automatically subscribe me to their mailing list like that.
Clear violation of the GDPR going on.
Yeah. And I just went through shotgunning tons of those and it cleansed my inbox. So I like what it does. It's also got like lots of little subtle things, like there's a sidebar in it. So you've got your main email view on the left and then there's like probably, you know, I don't know, like a fifth of the screen real estate on the right. There's a sidebar. When you click on an email from somebody, it shows their LinkedIn details, their summary, a couple of recent tweets, which is recent email topics, which is the reportive thing.
That's what reportive was, literally just that.
Yes. Except right. Which is,
they spent half their effort finding a way of patching it into the Gmail UI.
Yep. Right. And that's handy, but things like if I'm typing an email response to somebody and I say, you know, looking forward to talking to you on Thursday. When I type the word Thursday, it'll show my calendar for Thursday. And it's those little UI tweaks and conveniences that I think is so satisfying in elegantly designed software.
I think the thing which best expressed it in my head, and I didn't realize this at first. I spent a while looking into it, obviously, because I knew you'd start using it, we were going to talk about it and so on. And at some point, it just clicked in my head that I thought that what they were doing was essentially taking Gmail and adding power into it for power users. But I don't think they are. I think what they're doing is they're taking Mutt and making it pretty and available to everybody.
You know, it's interesting you say that. The way I described it to the guy, and I want to come back to the consultation because we said we'd come back to that, but he was like, what's your anticipation of this? That was his first question. I was like, this is VI for email.
Yeah. You know? Vim is the point.
Interesting, because I have a much different take.
Oh, really? No, that's interesting. So
let's go to the onboarding.
Okay.
Yeah. I think the value in this is very much not that.
Quick final feature thing, because I think is an important part of this to just paint the picture in everyone's minds. They also have this concept of a split inbox, right? So, you know, at the top of Gmail, you got promotions and social and updates and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
One of the things that you can do here And I'll give you an example. I have X number of clients, right? And I want to make sure that I see those emails all in one place, right? And I want to make sure that every day I get through them. I want to hit inbox zero. And a big chunk of the philosophy behind Superhuman is you hit inbox zero. And what you do is you create split inboxes for key elements. So for me, for example, I've got starred, which are like emails that I absolutely have to respond to fairly soon, right? And you just press S to star that. I've got VIP, where, for example, I'll take a client, an email from a client, and then I can press Command K, add to VIP, and then I can either add just that individual for their specific email address, or I can add their domain. So I can add all emails from that client, which is super handy. Now, and I've got another one for Google Docs, all emails from Google Docs, for example. So one of the benefits of this is that I can then look at, when I go to my email, I can see these buckets of critical email combinations, and I can just go through them one by one and satisfy them all and get to inbox zero.
And again, I mean, this is not strictly a new feature. That if you wanted to,
you can do that in Gmail.
If you wanted to do that in Gmail, that's a Gmail filter which filters things into a label that you've created, and being able to make that label one of the tabs at the top of your inbox.
Right, exactly.
So you can almost do all of that. But the point is that Superhuman has made you do it in a way.
Getting back to the onboarding, I think one thing that's interesting here is a lot of the value proposition to me is that they are opinionated about email workflow and make you work within that workflow. I suspect now if you went back to Gmail, you would be 30% better at email. Not the full 50% that they claim, if you take that as the baseline. Yeah. But I think what they've taught you is some hygiene and filtering and other rules around email workflow that are broadly applicable. Well, they've made it easier, broadly applicable across clients.
But you know what's interesting? Here's the interesting thing, and then we'll get onto the consultation. Then we'll just open it up.
Yep.
I was doing this stuff before.
Every little bit of this topic unfolds like a fractal into nine other bits. We're never going to reach the end. It's like Zeno's email client.
I've actually started making notes of things to get back to, which is...
I'm glad you're doing it, because I've already forgotten half of what we said. So... You know, a good example is I was adding labels, and one of the things I loved about Inbox was the bundling. I could add a list of clients in the bundling by filtering by email, and I'd see them all in one place. The reason why that I found that the bundling in Inbox I stuck with, right? Because I could bundle them based upon email domains. I found that applying labels in Gmail, for some reason, even though it's the same concept, I just didn't pay attention to.
Yeah.
So even though these are similar principles,
interesting.
I think it's easy for us to say that this is the same basic paintbrush applied.
Not at all. The fact that it's all under the covers of the same implementation is utterly not the point. How you present the idea is about nine times more important than exactly how it's implemented under the covers. I mean, if you think about it, right? Yeah. Gmail labels are under the covers IMAP folders, right? The IMAP people invented this stuff 30 years ago.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So anyway, the consultation, so basically get on for this 30-minute call with this guy. This guy was actually, I was expecting, if I'm, you know, being a cynic and all, I was expecting some corporate drone to get on there with the pre-canned speech. And this guy was super helpful, very insightful. He walked through the initial setup and we archived a whole ton of my mail, which needed archiving. And then kind of got some of these split unboxes set up, showed me a few of the key commands. And then importantly said, if you need anything, let me know. And actually I responded to him later that night with a question, because a friend of mine dropped me an email and said, hey, how do I get onto Superhuman? I was like, how do you know I'm using it? Because I didn't really talk very much about it. And it appended a sent by Superhuman thing on my footer.
Yeah. What?
Yeah.
I had the same reaction. I was like, what?
That's a catastrophic no-no client that fiddles with my email. None of that.
I and Superhuman, if you're listening to this, don't do that. Like, I appreciate the fact that this is a way for people to learn about your tool, but when you make decisions for your users on their behalf, you get his reaction. And I think that's a reasonable reaction.
People, and so people I emailed the guy. That you are a tool. Don't do.
And I emailed the guy and I was like, how do you turn this off? And I was just waiting for the, you can't turn that off. We've had great feedback about this, but no, you can turn it off. And I went and switched it off.
So it's opt out rather than opt in, but at least
They do seem very responsive. There was actually a bit of a fracas maybe about 6-7 months ago where they were actually defaulting on embedding a tracking pixel.
Read receipts.
That was a super read receipt, but every time you opened it, it would show the person who sent it not only when you opened it, but where you were when you opened it.
Yeah.
Which defaulted to on, which caused a huge thing. But to their credit, they looked at the clear privacy concerns that were around that.
And then blowback.
They completely not only did they completely remove location, but they went back and scrubbed all location data they had ever collected. So they certainly seem very open to feedback. It concerns me that I think early decisions you make when you found a new company become your ethos. And it concerns me that they seem to default to on, not default to off. Because the next time a decision comes up, it was, well, we've always defaulted to on. And that sets that precedent in a way that's a little bit dangerous to me. But they seem super receptive to feedback here, which is obviously good to see.
And the one thing I can say on that note as well, like I say, having met the the CEO, is he seems like a very thoughtful guy. I mean, we've seen the videos of him presenting and everything, but he genuinely in person seems like a fairly thoughtful guy and clearly values elegant interfaces and design.
Yes.
And I think I would like to think that him and his team will realize if you take those kinds of liberties with your user base's trust, you're going to get bitten at some point.
I think that's, one of the things that's interesting, I think, is we are all, I think, in favor of opinionated software. The people who build a piece of software declaring an ethos, to use Jeremy's word, declaring an approach they're going to take and then sticking to that. But in general, the reason we like it is because their opinions tend to agree with ours. Because if they don't, we wouldn't be using the software at all. But the downside of it is when they do a thing that you don't agree with, it feels that much more a betrayal. Because they've made an explicit decision to stick a tracking pixel in all of your emails and put an advert for their client on the bottom of all of your emails. You're like, I don't want you to do that. And the argument can't be, but we're making opinionated decisions. You were perfectly okay with the opinionated decision to get rid of labels. You didn't moan about that.
Yeah, and the thing is, as well as in the consultation that I had, the guy who, again, was wonderful, also loves metal, doesn't help. Why would I say that? he made a very clear point of the read receipts, right? Making a very clear point that, hey, I sent an email to him as an example. And, I could see inside of Superhuman that not only was it opened, but also it was opened on mobile. And then and they would show you each time it's opened. And you have to turn this on.
Is there a tick box with stalker mode written next to it? If you're sending emails to a business contact, it's just weird. If you're using it for personal email, that's also creepy and disturbing.
I don't know. This is a broader conversation about read receipts, but speaking personally, just in my own world and my business and everything, I'm not hanging on someone's word to see if they are opening an email. It's like, if you don't get a response, drop them an email after a couple of days. That's just how it works. It seems a bit odd to me. But I get that that's what they're trying to... That's clearly they're looking for an elevated level of functionality, and that's why they're positioning it that way. But they do need to be very careful with these privacy things. So
they do. I mean, I think from my point of view, the consultation itself is because they're selling what used to be called a service. Whereas now, you say we're selling a service, what that means is we've got some servers. And if we shut down the servers, the service goes away. But the idea of a personal service that you were providing to someone, to me, the consultation actually does help in that they teach you how to use Superhuman, give them a chance to instill their ethos into you a bit, get a sense of whether you're actually the right kind of customer. I mean, presumably, some people will go through the consultation, they'll go, you don't need this, don't pay us money, it will just annoy you. And then they
I don't know.
Right?
I don't know. But, I mean, who knows?
But I think you want to feel like, for the same reason that you have an assistant, right?
Right.
That you want something to help you deal with this stuff, someone to help you deal with all this stuff. Superhuman's kind of doing that, and therefore them saying, we're going to spend some time with you, makes it feel that much more intimate, that much more caring about
the luxury
how
thing.
You
I,
yeah. are.
I think they're selling a mindset and a methodology, though. I don't think they're selling a service.
I have to say, like I say, I was suspicious it about was the consultation. Word, I find it... I thought that it worked well. The one thing I want to finish off on, and I want to open it up so we can discuss all of this. The big question is it worth $30? Now, the caveat here, I've only used it for a couple of weeks, 1 week of which I was sick and in bed and not sending much email, right? So this is very, very early stages.
So you've so far paid $7.50 on it.
For me personally, I can very easily justify it. And to put simply, it's making me more efficient at email, and I'm looking at the cost of my time.
Yep.
And I think this is what they're looking at. Like, the cost of my time is more valuable than the cost of their service. And so if I can get even just a 20% efficiency in it, it justifies it for the year. And I actually think I'm getting a much faster level of efficiency. I'm actually enjoying doing email right now, which I think is probably going to be a short-term thing, and that'll wear off and I'll go back to hating doing email.
Yep.
But it makes it feel more manageable to me, because one of the things I touched on this earlier on, and I know a lot of people experience this, is that anxiety of I've missed something. Right. And I think especially when you run your own business and you are nervous that you don't want to annoy clients or prospective clients or whatever else, just having the satisfaction of I've delivered or I've responded to everything today for my clients, because it's all been easily added into that split inbox.
Yep.
Like, knowing that in itself is peace of mind. So I can justify the $30 easily.
Speaking of missed something, I just noticed that since signing up yesterday, I've gotten two emails from Superhuman. Both went into spam for Gmail.
Oh, really?
Ooh, interesting. Yeah.
To your point on the $30, I think I'm squarely in the demographic that they would like. Like, I'm someone that is in email all the time for a lot of different reasons and in the industry, et cetera. His one statement was, Gmail's built for 1 billion people. We want to build this for 300,000. And that's going to be kind of our guiding light, if you will.
Right.
If it saved me anywhere near 20% of the time that I was in email, $30 a month is a pittance.
No brainer.
Yeah. So I don't think that the $30 in itself is a lot, especially that I don't think they're just pitching it as an email client. I think they're pitching it as a productivity tool. And in that, with that frame in mind and the people that they're aiming this at, $30 is not their problem.
Yeah, to me. Totally. I mean, anyone who hears that price and goes, that seems like a lot of money for email, isn't in the target demographic.
You're not in the target demographic. This is not a value proposition.
You know, if I'm talking to some guy in the pub and he goes, I spent $8,000 on a camera, I would go, that's crazy amount of money spent on a camera. And he'd go, yeah, because you're not the sort of person who needs an $8,000 camera. You need an $8 camera. And that's fine.
Yeah, people are not looking at it from like the cheapest value perspective, right?
Yeah.
So getting back to the onboarding. So I have not actually gotten to use Superhuman because of the onboarding, and I just looked at it yesterday, et cetera, et cetera. I have seen the product, though, because Jonathan Edward James Bacon was nice enough to hop on a quick Zoom video call and walk us through the inbox a little bit.
I was
astounded, and this is before I knew about the consultation, astounded that he was willing to show his inbox just to Akinai over a video chat, because email is a very personal thing.
I didn't know you, because I thought, oh my God, there's his inbox. And I tried quite hard not to look at, not to focus on it.
Yes, reflexively, I also was like, oh, that's private. Like, I don't want to look at that.
Yeah, I don't want to
see your
inbox. The
fact that you have to go through a half an hour with them, go through your inbox, and it said if your inbox is of what they consider a normal size, they will wait till you hit inbox zero with them on the call, to me is...
They said that in the lead up to the consultation. I was like, yeah, you think that's going to happen? It's not going to happen.
I was going to say, I mean, are you, Jono, 38,000 unread emails last time I looked, Bacon? Are you honestly at inbox zero? We, what was it? We were somewhere and you had the email icon with a little badge on it. And I said, that can't be right, because when I use that, the badge is the number of unread emails. And you went, yeah, and it was like 70,000 or something.
Yeah, you know what that was? It was because I'm signed up to so many mailing lists. And that's what it all is. And I remember there being a bug or something where it was counting unread emails in the folders.
To me, the whole paradigm of needing to manually onboard someone for a consumer product for 30 minutes that only costs $30 is like peak Silicon Valley. So we'll put that aside for 1 second and get to having watched you go through the interface. It honestly is truly awesome. Like, the interface is super clean, super slick, austere in a way that I like. It gets you to focus on the things that I think are important, and kind of the rest ignore it goes into the background. I think the value is, and where I don't think it's mutt or vim, I think while the cleanness, the aesthetic is nice, and I think we all appreciate good design, while we disagree on what good design may or may not be, I think we all agree that good design is important. I think the intelligence built in and the way that the contextual pop-up works is all of the value.
Jeremy, are you talking about the like the sidebar where it shows you?
So the smart sidebar, stuff, but even just as you type things into this, I'll call it the pop-up CLI, the contextual understanding in the ML that went into that, I think, is really where the value of this comes in.
Hang on. So to clarify, John, let's talk about two things that are pop-up stuff there. There's, you type next Thursday. Yeah, I will see you next Thursday into an email.
And the sidebar updates.
And then the sidebar goes, this is your calendar. Are you talking about that, or are you just talking about the pop-up command palette?
Both, right? Right.
I think the general ML implementation is done very well.
What's ML magic about the command palette? I thought it was just like Spotlight or...
No, so you can use natural language in that, and it will decide what you want to do based on things you've done previously and what it thinks you want.
I had not seen that.
So it's actually super useful that Google has by far the best assistant on the planet and didn't do some of this is a little surprising.
Well, again, we'll get to the Gmail thing because that's coming. Any Gmail people listening to this, I would hold on to something if I was you.
But I think that the speed at which the interface works for anyone who's ever tried to delete 8,000 emails in Gmail at once. The response here is amazing. Whether this is an async or synchronous operation, I don't know, because I don't know the implementation and that matters.
That surprised me yesterday when I did the demo and I showed a bunch of emails that I was deleting. And that was when I got the ooh from Langridge. Yes. Well, and I just went through and deleted it. And this was over a video call.
To be clear... Right? You cannot respond in 100 seconds and also respond once you've deleted the emails. That's not how the network works, which means that you say, I'd like to delete all these emails, and then immediately throw your laptop into a volcano. They are not actually deleted.
No, of course not.
But I'm fine with that. They appear to be deleted, and it will catch up when it does it. One of the things I was going to ask you about, and they make a big deal on in their promotional stuff about how undo sending is built in. But...
Yep.
Gmail has this. It does it the way everyone does it, which is it pretends to send it, doesn't actually send it for 30 seconds.
It's not thoroughly interesting. They just have a longer time period. It's 10 seconds in Superhuman. It's like 2 seconds in Gmail.
Yeah, exactly. But that's
which,
what I thought.
Frankly, I'm okay with, because there's been a few times when I thought, oh shit, and then
wish I'd done that. Yeah.
Yeah, and then it wasn't within 2 seconds.
Totally. I wish, without ever saying so, and they go, we totally aren't implying this, but equally they are, misspelt names, treasure typos, emails we regret, the sort of implication here is, I'd like to take back that email I sent, last night when I was drunk, which is not what it does. But I think they'd say, we never said that. We just said there's undo.
I didn't get that impression from them, but maybe, yeah.
How many emails you regret sending? Did you regret sending fast enough to undo the send?
Well,
misspelt names, maybe.
It's misspelt names. I mean, but then again, I'm a weird example here because I'll give you, when I was in South Africa a few weeks ago, I responded to a client and sent them a contract while drunk. And then the following morning, I woke up and I looked over and I was like, there are no mistakes here at all. Wow. You know, if I was sober, there'd have probably been loads of mistakes.
You're a robot. That's uncanny.
bad example. Yeah.
So, yeah. It's basically, it's an email power tool.
It really is. And I mean, I'll give an update on using Superhuman in 6 months so people can get a sense of it.
Well, here is a deft segue because the last radical change to email, in my opinion, was Gmail doing conversations. That was the last thing which changed how people thought about how email worked, to the point where if I put you in an email client that doesn't do conversations, you'd go crazy.
That's true. Yeah.
And Gmail back then was this. It was fast. They were bringing out new ways to think about email. It wasn't cluttered. It had a whole bunch of features which were sort of theoretically possible before, like undoing, but no one had done. And you had, back then you had the Gmail Grease Monkey API. So Grease Monkey is a web browser yep. extension that lets you write your own little scripts. So you can plug scripts into a page. And the way it does it is like screen scraping. Yeah, you sort of just poke your way into the page and it probably screws the page up. What Gmail did was they built what they called the Grease Monkey API. So they explicitly supported people writing Grease Monkey scripts to interfere with Gmail and said, okay, interfering with Gmail is hard because it's all like compiled down to mad stuff. So here's an API you can call to do everything. We want you to do this. And then time, it withered and died on the vine. It became less important to them to allow this kind of thing, to the point where, as I said earlier, reporters spend half their time working out how the hell to poke the thing into Gmail in the first place. The superhuman people have gone, yeah, we don't want to make this like a Gmail plugin because that's really hard and annoying. We'll make it a separate product, but it's still Gmail under the covers, right?
Right. What I don't know is, I don't know if they support, you know,
non-Gmail.
They must do. They're not very explicit about this on the website.
They are not at all not. Explicit about it on the website. I mean, I did wonder, when Jono first showed it to us, I said, is this made by ex-Gmail engineers? Because this is exactly the kind of product that I can imagine the people who originally built Gmail and have since seen it get cluttered to the point where after, when did it come out, 2007? So after 13 years of it, they probably think, yeah, we'd love to be able to just put this little thing like the pop-up typing Thursday thing. But the amount of time and effort and stress they'd have to go through to get it into the interface and get it through all the reviews and work out how it's prioritized and so on means that they can't innovate on it anymore. And so,
I mean, Zimbra did this 10 years ago and it was awesome then. I'm surprised it never caught on.
Yeah. You know, so this to me feels like Gmail did when it came out. And that's why I thought I could totally imagine the people who built Gmail going, we can't get this done. Why don't we all just leave and set up a company and do it? Which you see, you see with a load of new products that come out, which are built by people who built it 5 years ago.
Yeah. I also, because during this Jonathan Bacon at onboarding that we had yesterday, he went through his original Gmail inbox as well. I did not realize what a default Gmail inbox looks like in 2020. I've customized mine so much, and mine is super. I guess I've turned up every single feature because it's super plain. The default experience is really cluttered.
Yeah,
it's incredibly cluttered. Yeah,
it was almost unrecognizable as Gmail to me.
It has become Yahoo Mail or Hotmail or whatever.
Yeah.
And until I mean, there have been a few people over the last 4 or 5 years saying, hey, we're going to reinvent email and we're going to make it happen. But an awful lot of them have got the nasty habit of going, okay, the way we do it is we ship all your email through our servers. And everyone goes, but we don't want you to do it. And they're like, oh, but we have to in order to add the value that we plan to provide. And then no one does it, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's one of the things that we were talking about just before we started recording here as well. And I think this is a bit of a segue, is I was thinking about why I like it so far. And it wasn't until I actually signed up for Superhuman, and I genuinely, hand on heart, this is the truth. This sounds like an excuse. I didn't realize that it was this kind of statusy Silicon Valley kind of thing where people are going around showing off that they're using. I genuinely had no idea about that. And
I mean,
frankly,
you can't even install it out of the App Store. You have to install it through the beta program for Apple and everything else.
The desktop app?
No, so they have an iPhone app as well, but you have to have
Test
Pilot.
Oh, you're talking about the iPhone app. Oh, I don't know. Yeah, that's the one thing. They do not have an Android app right now. They're building it,
yes.
But I don't have an iPhone, so...
Might not need one. So, just before you go on to that, since we're talking about that, how do you install it?
It's a Chrome plugin.
Yeah, but, and then you just go to their website, right? But then you need the Chrome plugin to do stuff as well.
Yeah, so you go to mail.superhuman.com, yeah. And then it fires it up. But they also have a desktop apps available too, which, from what I can tell, is basically a website in
the
a window.
Desktop apps is just going to be Electron, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, I asked the guy in the consultation whether it was just a website in a window, and he enthusiastically stated that it's a full native app, and from what I can tell, that was basically bollocks. It's just a website in a window.
My rambunctious beard, is it a full native app? I don't believe you at all.
And it might be, whatever, I don't know.
Yeah,
Slack
is, I bet you it's an Electron app.
Yeah, so
I might be wrong, and you know, Superhuman people, please feel free to correct us on this point.
One of the reasons why I like this is that I can see a very clear value proposition and justify the $30, because to Jeremy's point, if it speeds me up even a fraction more in terms of email and it makes my overall email experience better and less stressful, then it's worth it, okay? And I'm more concerned now about them going out of business because they don't succeed, because I love the product now,
yeah.
And I want them to succeed. So I think that's good, and I'm probably exactly the kind of user that they want. They want an enthusiastic user who's going to tell their friends and potentially talk about it on podcasts. But I think the reason when I look at it under the covers why I like it, it's because I really, really value super elegant design. That's lightweight, that's really just focused on, as we touched on earlier on, really, really focused workflow. You know, I think a classic example of this is GitHub. GitHub really have had a wonderful design philosophy from the very early days. It's super professional, very sleek. And that's one of the reasons why I think they've been so successful. Like GitLab, by comparison, for many years, it's getting better now, was just very much of a clunky alternative, and I think they've upped their game significantly. But I think there is enormous value in that. We often judge software and services based on the functionality and based upon the costs, but the design is so critical, I think, to this stuff.
I would like them to not go away. I have two questions, I guess. One, do you think that the privacy concerns of the access that you've given them to your email is enough friction that they will not be able to get a critical mass of people? And the follow-up to that is, do you think a VC-backed company that needs at least a $300 million exit to get what VCs are going to want out of this, that's a Chrome plugin built on top of Gmail, do you think that's a sustainable framework that they will successfully exit in a way that this product lives on?
Clarifying the first question a little bit,
sure.
I'm assuming what happened is you signed up to Superhuman. It popped up a button which said, would you like to allow this thing to imitate you to Google in literally every way possible? And you just clicked, hell yeah, sign me up, right?
Didn't even read it, I'm sure.
No, shut up. Assholes. No.
Okay, Google, just give all my shit to Superhuman. I assume
before I did that, when I had the consultation, I said to the guy, look, you know... I don't want all of my email going through your servers. One. Two, I don't want you to have a bug in Superhuman that will just immediately go and destroy all of my email, right?
Yeah.
And what he told me, and don't quote me on this, but he basically said that, you know, all they're not having all of your email going through their servers. They're not like taking copies of your email or anything like that. He did say there was one exception, which I think was for scheduling email. Like if you schedule an email to go out in 3 days
or something. So by definition, if they're retrieve or, you know, retract an email is longer than Gmail's default, they're keeping a copy of every email you send. They couldn't do that without, unless yes. they're delaying it in the browser.
They may
yeah, they could be just
unless they're doing like
browser.
A network delay in your browser, which is technically possible.
Yeah, I'm yeah, sure, so, that, I'm so, sure that's
so,
why they're
so
doing
so actually
it.
What happens is, because they delay for 10 seconds, when you click the send button, they swallow that send request for 8 seconds and right. then send yeah, it to Gmail, which then delays yeah. it for another 2 seconds and then sends it.
Well, an interesting test of this, of course, is to do that, refresh, and see if it's still there.
Yeah.
Well, no, refresh... No, that's not how that works.
No, I'm saying that I'm guessing they're holding in like short-term memory in the browser. They're not saving it to their servers. So if you were to refresh within the 10 second period...
They're probably using local storage in your browser, not yeah. their servers. Yes.
That's a good point.
But scheduled... Yeah. I'm curious how they do scheduled emails.
Yeah. Also, I mean, yes, I would have problems with all my email going through someone else's servers and everything. But one of the things that helps to mitigate that, one of the things that we've been saying to companies forever is if you're going to keep personal data on people, have a retention time on it. And after yep. you're sure you're not using it, delete it. And if that is the way they're doing it, Superhuman can go, okay, we retain our data on your servers for 8 seconds. So that's not that big a deal. It's only been one email at a time, right? So
yeah, and the one thing I you know, if Superhuman folks are listening to this, which is a funny sentence,
I hadn't thought about that.
It would actually after this to be great to get him on one of the shows and kind of chat through some of this, but
yeah, because I think that they are going to need to their website is beautiful from a functionality perspective, but they really are going to need to add more clarity of the privacy and the security elements to this. You know, they did say, for example, in my consultation that the edge case, the odd email here and there where it does go to them, I forget exactly what it was, you know, and that's all fully encrypted and all the rest of it. But they were very clear to me that they are not taking copies of your emails and storing it on their yeah. servers. Well, and that's important to me. If they did that, I don't think I would have signed up with them.
That's interesting. I think...
So screw you both, by the way, for thinking that I leave my tax returns in the shoebox.
One of the things that they've got to be thinking about from a business model perspective is if they don't... I mean, at the moment, they're kind of trendy. Yes, Jono, I believe you that you came upon this independently, and the fact that you happen to live near a bunch of people who found it trendy is not in itself indicative. But right. nonetheless, there are a bunch of people who I'm sure are getting on board because it's the cool thing. But it's not going to yeah. be the cool thing in a year, right? Right. So they have to have a longer term plan for, and unless they hit their hooray, we're now sustainable, brilliant, we've hit the targets point just off the trendy crowd in the next 2 months, which you can't do if you're giving everyone a half hour personal consultation. So
they've got to be if
they're in this for the long haul, they've got to be thinking about this because people are going to have this kind of question.
Well, one thing that's interesting to me is the fact that they've so publicly committed to this 100 millisecond like refresh rate or the response rate. The big fear that I have is that what happens to them is the same thing that happens to seemingly most software, is that it starts out lean and efficient. You touched on this
yeah,
earlier on.
Gmail.
You know, like, it starts out great and then it turns into this slow, bloated bollocks. And my hope is that they mitigate against that. And one of the reasons why they have, I suspect one of the reasons why they've committed to that 100 millisecond rule is that's a line in the sand that they're not going to be willing to cross over.
Yeah,
I mean, and if they do that, that's good, and I like that.
Well, bear in mind that the Superhuman people, to some extent, came up with that rule because they are quoting Paul Buchheit, who was the right. creator of Gmail, and his yes. rule was every interaction is faster than 100 milliseconds. It's not like it's like how Gmail used to be. That was literally Gmail's rule as well. This is
yes.
nothing like the case now. I think their point is,
as Gmail went to a billion users, they had some different constraints, and they don't ever want to get to a billion users. Right. So
and
I
also
agree,
Gmail.
Go on.
I was just going to say, and also Gmail never put that on the front page of their website as a commitment. They never said.
Eck and I both knew the comment came from the creator of Gmail off the top of our heads. It was pretty well known.
But you two are two nerds, of course. Like, do you think my dad knows that and he uses Gmail? No.
I also don't think he's paying $30 for Superhuman, though, so I'd...
My point is that the fact that they're so specifically focused on that level of responsiveness as an upfront feature, I think, is notable.
I hope they can stick to it. But to be honest with you, this sort of thing doesn't happen in the first 6 months or in the first year or the first 2 years. If Superhuman is still around 13 years from now, it wouldn't surprise me if it's got really bloated and someone's going to come along and go, well, the Superhuman people, they used to be great, but now they're rubbish. And now we've created our new email client, Ultrahuman, which delivers everything in 100 milliseconds. Right?
I mean, Superhuman was founded in 2014 or 2015. They've been around a long time.
Yeah. But that, I think, is the thing. If they get to the point where they have grown old and bloated enough that someone can come and steal that crown off them, they succeeded.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So that's that is a good thing.
So, I mean, we think they're trying to be sustainable as a standalone company long term? Because getting acquired by Google seems tough, because they already killed the inbox. I don't know what they would do. As cool as this is, I just don't know what Google themselves would do with it.
Oh, God, I hope they do not get acquired by Google.
Would another company be a little reticent to buy a product built on top of Gmail? Because it seems like Google could just say, no, not allowing it. So
Can they
generate enough revenue to keep V's happy at a $300 million valuation?
Well, they're talking about 300,000 users, right? That seems like an attainable-ish target.
Yeah. Yeah, but, for sure. He's doing maths. He's doing maths, people. And, I can tell.
And that pulls you in... Oh. It pulls you in 108 and then a load of zeros. So I think that's $108 million a year in incoming revenue. That's 300,000 users times $30 a month times 12 months is $108 million a year in revenue. Is that enough to justify a $300 million valuation? I would have thought so, but I don't know. This is not my field.
I have no idea what their margins are, so...
I'm going to throw... Yeah. This is the definition of a throwaway prediction, because I... beyond having a few beers with the guy in a bar, I don't know anyone at Superhuman, and I don't know the philosophy behind the company, what they want to accomplish. I get the impression they do not want to be just an acquisition target. I get the impression that they are going to start broadening out into a super high-end set of productivity tools. It'll start with Superhuman email, and then there'll be calendar... And then there'll be other things.
And they're Ruby people, right?
I don't know. I assume the whole thing is really
that
COBOL.
Team wrote Try. I don't know that Superhuman is... They don't have a lot of details.
I'm not necessarily suggesting that Superhuman itself is written in Ruby, but they've done Ruby stuff, correct, which means that they're going to be reasonably aware of A, Rails, and B, Basecamp. Right? So they have that example of that business model of, we're going to do a thing for people who want it, who will pay us for it, and we're not looking to get acquired, we're not looking to sign up a billion users,
right,
in a way that might feel a bit more visceral to them than other companies.
Right. I mean, I suspect that what's going to happen is, if they end up accomplishing anywhere close to that 300,000 target, and the buzz is forming around Superhuman, that people are going to start saying, I would love this for my calendar. And they'll come up with something similar.
I'd like Superhuman
because if you think
calendar.
About, you know, and their pitch will probably be, you don't need a personal assistant anymore.
We'll do this. I honestly feel like they are doing now, or attempting to do now, what Google did 12 years ago. Take a thing that already existed, that everyone used and continued to use, bring in speed. And bring in a few new innovative things, but mostly bring in something which is considerably nicer than the clunky, enterprise-feeling, badly designed, ugly clients that you were before. And Gmail has now kind of become that, and it's time for someone new to step in. And they kind of have the advantage that if it honestly is back-ended to Gmail, they don't have to do the difficult half. That's not a fair way of putting it. What they've done is extremely difficult. They don't have to do the boring, invisible half.
Yeah, very interesting. I would love to I know we're nearing the end of the show, but I would love to hear from those people in the Bad Voltage community who have managed to scale the mountain and also have a consultation and get access to Superhuman. Yeah. I've heard some people have been on the waiting list for 2 years, and I've heard Jeremy, as an example, got access immediately.
Given the fact that both of you ended up at the front of this 200,000 person waiting list in a day, I don't believe anyone's been on the mailing list for 2 years, and that's just lies to get you to sign up.
A friend of mine told me that she's been on for 2 years.
So when you put your email, I'm assuming you just went to superhuman.com and put your email into the form.
I did,
or did you talk to him before? Okay, you just put your email in.
No,
Did it immediately say you skipped the queue and allowed you to take the poll, or did...
It was like 10 minutes later.
Oh, no, mine was, when I say immediate, I mean... I clicked enter and it said...
Actually, no, you know what? Mine was, I think, pretty much immediate. And by the way, you, Jeremy, criticized the 10-minute onboarding thing. Similar kind of view. Like, when I started, I was like, oh, come on. And then I thought, you know what? Whatever, I'll go through this. They're clearly trying to tune this to my workflow.
Yeah.
And I actually didn't mind doing that so much. So I was very cynical of their onboarding piece. The one thing I do want to touch on before we wrap up, if the future of Superhuman is going to be... potentially this new productivity company that's really focused on prosumers, Mr. Langridge, or just professionals in general, and they're going to expand into other apps and this, that, and the other. One thing that I think they really need to focus on, they need to focus on the privacy element anyway and make sure that they're clear in how that they respect people's privacy, but especially if they're going to be going after... competing with someone like Google, because people are hammering Google when it comes to privacy.
And this is the thing that Google cannot compete on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, this is where I'm curious if you can use Superhuman without Gmail, because they have not made that clear.
Yeah. And
I don't know.
I suspect they're deliberately making it unclear because they don't want to say yes, because a bunch of people will go, but what if I leave Gmail? But they don't want to say we can do other stuff because they can't, would be my guess, but I don't actually know.
I don't know. I mean, you'd think that they would support at least Exchange.
on the prosumer point, I think it'd be interesting at the moment, because it's trendy, I think there'll be a lot of people signing up who don't actually need it like you do, or like you, the two of you do, but would like to present themselves as being the sort of person who needs it, who wants to be able to say, wow, I have so much email that I need a special tool to deal with this. Of course, I'm using Superhuman, because it makes you look important. It makes you look like you're some email superpower user, even when you're actually not. And that's when it stops being trendy, that goes away, and then they've got actual people who actually need it.
You know what, people? If you ever want to brag or kind of appear more socially prosperous because of your email client usage, okay? Don't think that way, validate yourself in other ways.
Have you seen our industry? How do people go, oh man, I was working so hard last night, I've been doing 80-hour weeks. People go on, or people utterly validate themselves about how hard they have to work.
You know what my favourite one is the people who are constantly talking about how much they have to travel, and they say how much they hate travelling. I used to work with someone at Canonical who did this, who we all know. And it's like, you obviously love travelling. Stop humble bragging about how much you travel.
That's the word I'm looking for, humble bragging. The other thing I would say to community people is there will be a bunch of people out there who I think would have the same instinctive, visceral reaction to this that I have, which is everyone who says, yeah, we've come up with a brilliant new way that powerful people can, that people can get power out of their apps. And what we've done is, put the command line back in, right?
And to there's some a trend extent, of this, though. More and more apps are building in a NLP command line, which I personally like because that's how I think. But it's interesting that's resonating with enough people to be popular again.
The thing that I want to say to people who had that instinctive reaction is, don't be resentful of it. Right? Don't say, oh, we had all these ideas 15 years ago and now suddenly they're all getting on board. Think... yeah, they're getting on board. This is great. They're not necessarily presenting the way to power being typing things on your keyboard in necessarily the way that Linux was doing it 25 years ago. But Linux isn't doing it the way Linux was doing it 25 years ago either, right?
Yes, it's the same people who say that Slack is pretty IRC. It's like, come on.
Yeah, exactly.
Come on. It's different to that.
But that, I think, is the thing. I would like people to look at stuff like this and say, yeah, some of the ideas that I hold dear in myself, if you're the sort of person who thinks that the command line is a good way to do things, great. Celebrate the fact that it's showing up in a whole bunch of applications, including things which are currently trendy in Silicon Valley, because that's how we get people to give a shit, right?
Exactly. Well, we should probably wrap this up. Before we wrap this up, we should, of course, talk about Bad Voltage Live.
We should.
Sure.
Because it's really soon.
It is alarmingly soon.
It is extremely soon. So this show is released on the 20th of February 2020, and the Bad Voltage show. In fact, Mr. Langridge is going to be flying out a little over a week after that to the Bay Area, and then we're going to be doing the Bad Voltage live show on the 6th of March, the year of our Lord 2020, in Los Angeles, Pasadena.
From when the show comes out, 2 weeks in a day.
So it's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to be... should we tease a little bit about what's going to be in the show?
Well, we should talk first about... This is a... if anyone listening to this doesn't know, this is a Scale, which is in Pasadena, in California. You have to buy a ticket for Scale, but you'd want to do that anyway. And then you get to see Bad Voltage live, and it's going to be fantastic. So go and buy Scale tickets. and then you get to see a whole bunch of stuff, including, I don't know, do we tease anything? I don't know if I want to do that.
I don't know. I was thinking we should, and then I thought, then I got cold feet.
I got cold feet about that. I'm not sure. No, yeah. I don't think we should do that.
Well, why don't we say this, right? There will be a good mixture of fun, entertainment style content. There'll be some deeper kind of technical nerd discussion. The whole thing is going to be packaged up in a 1 hour show that will be unmissable.
Don't give up your day job and go into marketing, pal.
That was all I've got. That's it.
Unmissable.
Also, weirdly, here in the show notes, it says equally as hilarious, if not more hilarious. And then it says tagline for Scale, but I don't know where that tagline came from. Or whether we're supposed to use it or what.
Yeah, I don't know. I've forgotten.
But yes, so we will hopefully see you all at... to be clear, there won't be a show 2 weeks from now.
Right.
Because we'll all be on a plane or something. So,
yes. And then the next show will be...
We can record a short live segment, probably.
Oh, we might. Well, we might do something. No promises, but you might get a sort of... you know, outside broadcast sort of vibe.
Live from Jono's kitchen.
Live from Jono's kitchen. Jono's kitchen nightmares. So.
Yeah. Brilliant. All right, folks, let us know what you think about Superhuman on the forum or in the Slack channel, and we'll see you next time.
And then it comes to 32 gigs soldered on already.
Right.
So the reason this is coming back on, I think, is I read on one of the local papers, because this has been happening for a while. One of the local papers from Iowa or somebody is now talking about how the... Uh-oh. Stuart's telling me to stop.
Yeah, we've lost his audio. We can't hear you, Ack. Okay. This is a rare moment, listeners, where we can't hear Stuart Langridge. I've laid at night in bed praying for these kinds of moments.
This is actually why I thought you invited me on, so I could experience.
This is a good
this
thing.
This is like a now we lunar get to eclipse.
Watch. Now we get to watch one individual who knows nothing about AV trying to fix AV. And can he hear us? Fantastic. Can he hear us? I think he can hear us and is ignoring us.
He's nodding.
He can hear us. I can see his bouffon bouncing up and down as he nods eagerly that he can hear us. Now I think he's saying, shut up, I'm trying to fix it. Oh, he thinks this isn't going to be cut out the show, but it's going to be left in.
I love how the red is slowly starting to get deeper and deeper and deeper.
It sounds like a Cannibal Corpse song, from the red to the purple. Okay, oh, how's
this
it going
This
now?
Might be serious. This might be just more of a...
This is not good. He's looking very confused. He's looking in multiple different directions, and he only has one monitor. He just did a Laurel and Hardy scratching his head move. Okay. This is...
So you listening to anything good lately?
Let's talk about metal. Good idea. Not real. Actually, I found this. I sent you a link to this. That band called Jawn, and that really cheesy video of the guy sat in the chair singing angrily into a camera. Actually, after mocking him, I went and, well, mocking him privately, obviously, not to him, that'd be mean. Went and listened to their entire back catalog, and it's awesome. Jawn. Yeah, it's really, really good. It's very melodic, kind of German power metal. What about you?
Not metal, but Greta Van Fleet I really got into. I was kind of like, Zeppelin ripoff, whatever. But then I too started listening to the back catalog and listening to interviews with them. And on their YouTube channel, they have a bunch of cuts where it's not just a song, but they add like a solo section or whatever in the middle, and it's all live.
Yeah.
And they blew me away. Like, the recording of them live blew me away. And I was
no
just
kidding.
Like, yeah. I have this thing where, like, it doesn't matter if I don't like anybody. If they're good live, I just suck right in. And yeah, they do sound a lot like Led Zeppelin. It's like, but it's so good. I mean, nobody's making music like that anymore. And I love it, man. It's real. It's like, they can play. They're from Michigan,
you know?
Like, I live in Michigan. It's just, I don't know. I spent all day yesterday. It was great.
Best live album.
Ever.
I mean, it's obviously Live After Death, but I mean, what would you, by Iron Maiden listeners, what would you say? He's still figuring it out. I love this. He still can't speak. We can't hear him.
I have many.
The Lord has answered my prayers. What? All right.
Probably the live album that made the impression on me the most, probably.
It's got to be Rush.
Yeah,
right?
It's going to be. It's which Rush live album, which is the hard part for Rush fans.
Right.
I'm going to go Show of Hands, not a popular one with a lot of Rush fans, probably, with that era. But yeah, that one's important to me.
And Neil Peart, may you rest in peace.
Yeah.
All right, hang on. We have a chat message. No, NFI, what's up here? Back shortly. It's time for a reboot, Langridge.
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe it might be worth rebooting the thing.
What we can't hear right now is him screaming at Pulse Audio.
Hey, you know what? I'm on Linux. My shit's working perfectly. I don't know what.
You'll be on machine. Your computer's not 15 years old. All right. So he's on his way. He'll be back soon. I think we just keep recording. We'll stick this in at the end.
Yeah, that's fine.
All right. What other music you listen to?
Let's see. So that I'm still on my huge Ghost kick. So that's... That's
so
that
good.
Cataloging.
Apparently they got a new out there. They're doing no touring this year, and then they're going to have a new album out next year. They're spending an entire year making an album, which is good because they have the time and what happens if they descend a little too much? Because the last one was good, but it wasn't good as I think the previous ones. Did you like?
I liked it. I definitely like some of the rawness, I think, of the earlier records, you know, but I their last two singles, which was Kiss the Goat, which is hilarious.
That was cool.
And what was the other one's good? Bloody Mary. My wife even likes that. She doesn't really like Ghosts.
Oh, Erica loves Ghosts. Digs Ghost.
Yeah.
Yeah. What she doesn't like is she's like, I like Ghosts, but I don't really like all of the satanic lyrics.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's all completely tongue in cheek. It's very Hammer Horror.
Yeah.
So for people who are listening to this, if you're still listening to this, Ghosts are this weird band, and they look like, you know, all of the musicians have got like these black, almost like executioner's outfits on with these creepy masks. The Nameless Ghouls. And the singer, Papa Emeritus, originally came out as this weird looking Pope. And then kind of transitioned into a different kind of, they have like different characters for the things. It sounds like some horrible emo thing that 16 year olds would be into, but the music is this really cool groovy 70s rock.
Yeah.
It's there's melodic.
It's kind of, I don't want to say genreless cause that's overdone, you know, but like,
right.
It's not heavy, heavy metal. Like it's not
right.
Yeah. It's like groovy.
Oh, it's so good.
Weird.
It's yeah.
And then of course I'm listening to obviously the new Tool records backwards and forwards. I scored a bunch of new vinyl too lately.
Really?
Yeah.
All right, Grandad, how's that working?
Yeah, you know what? Make fun of me all you want. I got this Roger Waters Live in New York double LP set, which is recorded really well.
Is he still kicking?
This is an older one, but he is still kicking. Oh, okay. Yeah. But yeah.
He is a very humorless individual in interviews. It's like, I can't understand why there were possibly any interpersonal issues in his previous band. Like,
oh boy.
It's so miserable. It's like, okay, you're one of the most well-known, accomplished musicians in the world.
Yeah.
You get to play in front of thousands of adoring fans. Lighten up a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah. I expect that from black metal, but I, you know, do not expect that from Roger Waters.
Yeah, have you seen him live? Because he does retrofit his themes from his albums into modern context. So if you've seen if you've seen The Wall recently, all the imagery and stuff is from modern politics and not like the shit you see in the movie. So he like mixes it up.
Right. So it doesn't have like kids in 80s school uniforms.
Yeah, exactly. So singing. He keeps that relevant. Uh-oh. That's cool. Uh-oh.
Is he back? No, we can't hear you.
Is there a physical switch on your microphone you might have tripped?
Yeah, did you mute it, Ack? You press it.
There, wait, you're back now. There you go. Yeah.
What did you do that's different just now? Did you press the mute button?